Welcome to Mindvine, a mental health podcast for everyone. Since our first episode in 2016, we have been sharing stories of recovery, engaging with experts, and tackling the stigma associated with mental illness. The Mindvine podcast is produced by Ontario Shores Center for Mental Health Sciences and is available on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts.
Welcome to the Mindvine podcast. I'm your host, Daryl Mathers. And today we're talking about a couple of different aspects of complex mental illness. One is the patient journey and the other is the caregiver journey. And we're lucky enough to have both kind of perspectives here today. And they work on kind of unique projects, at least unique, you know, in the mental health space, and really doing a great job creating conversations about their own personal experiences and in an effort to help others. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome our guests. We have Isha, welcome. And we have Shabnan, welcome. And I was telling you earlier before we started recording just about having watched your documentary. So for people that don't know, Shabnan directed and produced a documentary about the experience with Isha going through complex mental illness. It's called Unfinished. And we'll talk a little bit about where people can see it and other things, but can you tell us a little bit about, maybe start with you, Shabnan, as Isha's starting to develop, you know, symptoms of mental illness, what made you decide to grab a camera and start capturing the journey?
Well, Isha was 16 when she had an episode and was diagnosed with a mental health condition. And prior to that, as a new immigrant, I was making films with family because of lack of funding. So I said, okay, let me start telling personal stories of my own experience as an immigrant. So I did a film with Isha called The Immigrant Youth Experience. It was called Isha Journals. And so I had already started this initiative of making a film with her. And in the midst of that, she got sick. And but I did not stop filming. I just kept filming, not thinking about it as content for the film, but as an experience of documenting material which may be required by the doctors. So it became that kind of documentation. It was never intended to make it into any film. So after that, after more than 10 years, I started looking at that material, and it was still difficult to look at it. And when I started my master's program at York University, that's where I thought it's time to address the illness and try to better understand what really happened, what went into our lives that caused the triggers for her illness. So it was more like an investigation. And I wasn't thinking of at that point to release the film because we were caught in the pandemic and we were filming more material at the time. And that was going to become part of a film, which was just a way of coping with our situation, not with the intention of releasing it, you know, so or sharing it with anyone.
I would guess as the daughter of a filmmaker, Isha, you're probably used to having your mom put a camera in your face. And so I understand that piece. And there are times in the documentary where you do, you know, you do seem irritated that there's a camera in play, but most of the time you're not. And I wonder, like, was that ever something that you, like when you're going through that, obviously you're going through, you know, you're diagnosed with bipolar disorder, you're going through that journey. There's lots on your plate. I guess maybe a camera is not your biggest concern at the moment. But what was it like kind of being filmed at that point in your life when you're dealing with so much?
So I feel like in a way having that camera was a good thing because if the camera wasn't there, my mom would be involved with the real me instead of the me that's in the camera. So she had something to occupy herself with. And as for myself, I was in my own world anyway. So I was in my own episode, and I I mean, I was aware to some extent that she was filming me. Sometimes I would, put up an act for her just because I knew she was filming me. So I had that much awareness that she's filming me, and I would be like, act up a little more just so that she gets a little drama. But I think it helped all of us. It helped her cope because she had that camera and she was really trying to, apart from investigate, I think she was trying to cope with it. And that was her coping mechanism.
It was definitely a coping mechanism, right? In the opening of the film, Ishar does mention we kind of situated why the film was made. It's like my mother makes films to cope with her demons. These are Isha's words. So when I got my diagnosis, she took the camera to record our lives together. So the film is literally that. It is something we made together. I will never say that it's my film alone. It's also Isha's film. She was the main research associate on the film, and it's mentioned at the end. Having said that, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy to make a film simply because you don't make films to just keep it in your library. We reached a point where I think Isha felt more strongly about it, that we need to share this film with more people. So I did a test run with some caregivers and some doctors, and they felt very strongly about it. In fact, Isha's counselor, who lives in Boston, he said, "Can I share it with some of my families? It's an important piece." So he's also mentioned in the film. So he was aware that we were making the film while she was in therapy and while she was in and out of hospital during those 6 months of the pandemic. We were in the heart of the pandemic, so it was really a difficult time for the family, for everyone, for the world, actually. But so we never thought about an audience when we were doing the film. And because of that, you can see the honesty with which we were able to tell our story.
As you watch, I don't want to give too much of the documentary away, but what I really struck me about it is how real it is in when I compare it to what other people have shared with us about their experience in navigating the mental health system or navigating, a mental health journey is there are times when Isha really is in crisis and you're sorting out where to take her and when, and then you're sorting out medication and there's great hope and then there's great sadness and it goes back and forth. And when I was watching it, I'm like, this is as a parent, it's tough to watch. You don't want, you're watching your daughter struggle, and I'm sure, you felt helpless at times. But in the other side of it, sorry, I look at it and I think, well, anybody that is about to embark upon this journey, if they see this, they're going to be prepared, better prepared, because it's a tough road. Like it's not presented, there's hope and Isha's doing great today and we'll talk about that. But when you're living in that, in the moment, it's tough. And is that part of what you're, now that the film is out, like it's kind of your hope maybe to prepare people for what to expect, if they have to go down this road with a loved one?
I think it's more about sharing an experience with families dealing with mental health and to let them know that you're not alone. I was very vulnerable myself in the film, which also speaks to what I was experiencing, my own mental health, how it was affected as a caregiver, how we were all affected as a family. Because I think that is a very important conversation. We always forget the piece about the caregivers, what they are enduring, what are the supports we have for them in community. That has been my struggle, and that has been my advocacy piece as well. Not only to normalize the conversation around mental health, but also to talk about how can families be included in the conversations from the clinical perspective. Like, when do clinicians actually include the family voice? Because how important that is, we forget about it. Whether it's good or bad, it's important to include because it's important to build those bridges. Because once your loved one is out of the hospital, they go back to the family and they're in their care. So it's important to build those bridges. You know, have a smooth transition from the hospital into community, back into community. So that involvement needs to be more rigorous. It is missing right now. We're still struggling with that. We're still struggling with issues of consent you know, how do you offer that support, you know? How do you make it public? You know, the privacy issues, you know, all those things sometimes interfere with recovery because we're not talking about mending a person. We're talking about supporting a person. And how do all the pieces work towards that? That's the conversation that I think we are interested in having. Isha, you want to add to that?
See, for me, definitely involving the family is an important part. But even for us, I have like recollections of my doctors talking to my father and my uncle, my late uncle. He passed away due to COVID. That was very rough on me, but. So they were part of my caregiver system, and I completely believe also in what Mom said in a very collaborative care model, which Dr. Gary Saxon talks about always with me. So and it doesn't even have to be a doctor or a counselor, really, anyone that you can really confide in and use as a support system. Every patient needs that. They need to have two or three people or individuals that they can really confide in their times of need, whether it's a doctor, counselor, sister, brother, friend, anyone really. It could even be a stranger. Like, we just need... But I think the barrier that turns up is that the very step that patients need to take to kind of reach out for help because they feel that they're not comfortable enough to share their what they're going through because they feel that no one will understand it. They won't be understood. And that's, I think, something that we need to work on. When we talk about hospitals, families need to be a part of the whole healing process, definitely.
Yeah. I think Isha's talking about judgment. That stigma is
stigma, yeah.
And we self-stigmatize as well when we isolate ourselves, when as a family we are struggling. Well, pandemic forced us to isolate, but you otherwise also isolate. You don't want anyone to know what you're going through as a family. You don't want to reveal or discuss or bad mouth the experiences of your loved one. So, I think with our film, we've tried to break that barrier. So when you're making it as raw as possible, and this was a very conscious decision because when you make a film, you have the choice to sugarcoat things. You have a choice to not go all out there. But yeah. I consciously picked up those pieces which I would never, ever put in a film.
I think also what the interesting part about this film, and I think Mom must have gone over this while making it too, is that if we've made the audience uncomfortable while watching it, we've achieved our goal. You know, like they've got to feel a bit uncomfortable. Otherwise, yeah, so.
No, I would agree. And I think that's what makes it so interesting to watch is it is uncomfortable because it's there's footage that we haven't seen before, at least presented in that way. And you were just talking about the family perspective. And the one thing I came clear as you watch the entire documentary is even at your lowest points, your mom is there, you know, and even when you're pushing her away, I still get a sense that, you know, that you are connected to her and you love her. Right. And I'm, and like, even when you're, so I just wonder, Isha, like as you're, you know, you're going through these ups and downs, and especially in the downs, While you might be angry with your caregiver, that connection and that love that they have and they're fighting for you, that's got to play a role somewhere in your recovery.
Yes, absolutely. I think that I was extremely lucky that I had my mom there. I knew there were some people there in the hospital that didn't really have any caregiver coming in as often. And they were in there, you know, dealing with this alone. But having said that, I did feel that all of the patients who were living together in that unit, in that moment, we were the family for each other. You know, we had to support each other, and we didn't judge each other. We didn't, you know, we all knew we were in it together, you know. But coming to the point of having someone like my mom come in, it made my journey far easier. And yes, on one side, I can complain that, oh, you know what, she put me on a community order. I wasn't happy with that. But
treatment, the CTO.
Whatever it is, I don't know what it's called. What is it called, Mom?
Community treatment order.
Community treatment order, exactly. So, yeah, so I wasn't too happy with that. But I realized that all the decisions that were being made for me were being made in my best interest, actually, although it didn't seem like that at that time. So, and I also want to say to the people who do have the caregivers, there has to be faith and trust in the caregivers, because if you don't have that, then it's going to be an even more difficult journey, because you'll be resisting everything that's being, you know, pushed onto you and presented to you. So I think you should just be grateful and accept it. I know it's sometimes difficult to do that, but family is family.
Yeah, and I want to say that does not mean that my loved one doesn't have the agency. She definitely has the agency, the decisions that she has to make, but she needs to be realistic about how far she can extend herself. Because if you don't be conscious of that, if you don't do that balancing act, it can tip, you know, against you. So, and that is the only reminder. I think now slowly I'm really stepping back from trying to micromanage her life, because that tendency is there. You don't want your child to fall. You know, you want to protect, you want to really protect. But in protecting too much, you're disabling the child further. So, and the idea is not to become just independent. So I'm not talking about being ableist, but I'm definitely talking about acknowledging what it is and trying to find ways and supports in community that can help you thrive in the best possible manner. So, and it has been a journey for me, Daryl. It's not been easy. This has come after over 15 years of struggle, or it's an entanglement process, you know. Mm-hmm. It's taken time.
And it's important, I mean, you've touched on it, for caregivers to take care of themselves in this process, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, probably what most parents do, is they put their kids first and themselves last. And in some facets of life that works. But when you're talking about the stress that you're under as a caregiver while your child is in crisis, you have to find ways to maintain your own mental health.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. It didn't come easy. Initial years were pretty bad. One did not care for oneself. One succumbed to the pressures. In fact, I've kept one audio recording in the film, which speaks to my mental breakdown, you know, which suddenly made my daughter feel that, okay, maybe it's better I go to the hospital. So she was at that point doing that for my sake. You know, that, okay, you know, my mom can't deal with this. I haven't been sleeping, and she's not sleeping, and that's really wiring her up. You know, so she had that awareness. Even in those states, she was very conscious of what's happening. around her, you know. She, except for she didn't know about the pandemic, so she, every time she wanted to just go out. So that was the only thing. But apart from that, I think she was, I mean, now we can laugh about.
I should tell you one funny story about that. So I started coughing in the hospital, and I'm like, that's when I really knew COVID existed. So I'm like, I think I might have COVID. They actually put me in the isolation room. I had to spend an entire night there until they conducted tests. And my doctor came and he's like, what are you doing here, Isha? I'm like, I thought I had COVID. Anyway, but.
I was going to ask about the impact that this has had. So, it's available, the documentary, your story, you've been sharing your stories in multiple ways. And I know that, you know, there's still stigma associated with mental illness all over the place, all over the world, but it's sometimes different in different societies and cultures. And you know, being, you know, originally from India and coming to Canada and, you know, navigating kind of the cultural components of mental health, what's that been like? And what do you hope, whether it's this movie or, sorry, this documentary or your story, like, what do you hope it contributes to in terms of the stigma in your communities?
Oh, I have to say, although stigma is universal, it is maybe more in our communities. And that's also the reason why I'm continuing with my research, because I feel we need a more culturally diverse perspective in trying to understand the dynamics within families, different kinds of families, because different supports are needed for different people. And even the loved ones who are in the hospital, they need to be approached differently, given their cultural, you know, backgrounds. So it was really missing. When Isha got diagnosed, we were just told what was happening. We were not told anything more. So one started thinking about cause and effect. One started blaming oneself that, oh, I've done something wrong and that's why this has happened. One started looking for reasons why this has happened, because we had no knowledge about it. So in terms of the information piece, a lot more can be done by hospitals and mental health centers, how they can further inform the families, prepare them how to deal with it, you know, have more workshops, make it more participatory, you know, so that people can discuss more that this is how we live. This is what I feel. This is what I think my neighbors will feel. I don't want to tell anyone. And what are the implications if I do share with everyone? For me, the biggest fear was, will my daughter ever be able to find a partner again? Will she ever be independent? What about her after I go? So these are those concerns which we need to talk more about in safe spaces. The film is meant for screening in safe spaces. It's not meant for, you know, just sharing it and sending it to film festivals. But definitely for using it as a mode for triggering more conversations, creating a space for knowledge building, you know, where we find solutions around the issues that we are dealing with. And I don't think the film is unique to our culture, the way I have put the artifacts together. A lot of families, even outside of my community, they're able to relate with a caregiver situation. A lot of loved ones are able to relate with it. They said, oh, we never knew our parents were going through so much. You know, things like that. Those responses reaffirm our need, you know, to advocate a lot more than we are. I had no voice when Isha was diagnosed for several years.
First up. Isha, how, you know, as it relates to your experience, when you're going through this and getting diagnosis, did you feel alone in terms of in your community? Like, did you know somebody who had been through something like this, or did you know much about mental health? Like, what was your, you know, experience level when you were faced with this life challenge?
So I actually Didn't know many people, but what happened, I started to know more people once I moved to Canada, actually. One of my best friends also has it, and another friend who's from Bangladesh, she also has it. And so we actually started to talk about these things, and once I started talking about it openly, and in most cases I was the one who brought it up, that's when they said, oh, you know what, even I have it. And there was one very dear family friend of ours in India who had it, and I knew about that diagnosis of his, and he recently committed suicide. That was very heartbreaking for all of us. So yes, there have been people in the community, but I will say this, that people are not the one in most cases to bring up the topic and openly talk about it. I mean, it has to be like you have to take the initiative. If you want to talk about it, you have to start open up the conversation and just throw it out there. But I'll guarantee you this, that the moment you throw it out there will be people who will catch on to it and say, you know what, me too, me too, me too. It'll be all like that. So, yeah.
As you go through your story, obviously, the lows are heartbreaking, but here we are today. We were just talking about what you're doing, Isha, with your life and being in school and sharing your story. And you talked about telling anybody and everybody about your experience in hopes of helping others. What was the Because in the documentary, there's several pieces where you're sorting out medication, you're sorting out treatment, there's hospitalizations. When did things maybe consistently turn for you in terms of your recovery journey? Like, when did things become more manageable and like get you to where you are today?
So I would say something changed for me about, like, say 2 years ago. It was a very gradual process. Like it was, some medicines were making me hungry, making me gain weight, and some were not working for me. So the medications constantly change. But I can tell you the meds I'm on now, which really work for me. I'm having lithium and valproic acid, and these two medicines work so well for me. And I think it's not just the medicines which people don't understand. It's also our behaviors, such as our sleep patterns, because we have to have a proper sleep cycle. So making that conscious effort to go to bed between 9 and 10 p.m. Only once in a while I've had late nights, and that's only when I can enjoy them and afford them, having had, like stable sleep for the rest of the month. I can maybe do it once a month or something. And yeah, so basically taking care of your sleep, and then not having caffeine. I stopped caffeine entirely, and also going to the gym. I've started going to the gym, and having exercise, like having an active life, is a very important part of well-being. I think physical well-being definitely. But it's linked. The physical and mental well-being is completely linked. When you it improves your moods, it releases endorphins, as everybody knows. So these things really help me. And also, apart from all of this, keeping myself occupied. Like my partner has noticed this about me. He said that if you don't have anything to do, or you're not occupied with something meaningful, then there's cause to worry, right? But if I give myself like a schedule, a meaningful routine and a schedule, say that I will wake up, I will do these assignments, I will read, I will go out, take the dog for a walk, I'll do something. So these things have to be done, and it's not really discipline, but just keeping yourself feeling meaningful, really, but because the moment we feel useless in life, then I think everything in our body starts to break down.
I think you're talking about managing your health, right? Learning what you need in order to maintain your health, and sounds like you're doing great. As a mom, Shabnam, you see where Isha is today. I mean, you got to be proud, and there's probably a range of emotions, but how does it feel today compared to maybe where the documentary left off?
Definitely, I am a very proud mom, but I'm also proud to see how Isha is navigating her life, taking her own decisions, holding herself accountable for her actions, because that was something that was missing earlier. Everything was attributed to the diagnosis, but now she's beginning to take ownership of her life. So she's coming out as a person. So as a parent, I think a time comes when you need to let go. You need to say, okay, it's important that she take her own decision. I'm there for her for as long as I'm there. But she needs to live her life and I need to lead mine. So I think that has been the learning. And I think the process of making the film together did help us strengthen our relationship in terms of understanding each other. It wasn't just about me accepting her diagnosis. It was also about her trying to understand where I was coming from, including my cultural barriers, because initially I was really protective about the way she would dress up, because although I came from an educated background, but I was still very conservative in my ways. So, those struggles, one has overcome that now to some extent, and it has come with experience. It has come with acceptance of one's own flaws. Because as parents, we need to understand our own flaws as well, because we have these expectations. I'm proud of my daughter, but I know she could get sick again. And that's okay. She will know how to stand up by herself with the support of which are in place for her now. She has her own doctor. She has us. She has counselors. She has friends. She's going to be married soon. So she's going to have a spouse. So that is so beautiful to see her thrive, we all have adversities. We all deal with crisis, some sort of the other. It could be a loss of a job. It could be some disease, a physical disease or an accident. These things happen in life. So this is also something that happened and we're dealing with it. It's just how you respond to it, right? End of the day, it's our responses that really make or break a person. I think that's how I feel now.
Isha was telling me before you came on just that she considers herself a mental health advocate now and in terms of sharing her story. And I know you do as well, Shabnan. What are some of the messages that you would want to share with people, either, that have watched the documentary or haven't? You're talking about in the street, somebody asks you a question or whatever the case may be. Like, what are some of the things that you would want to share with people about whether it's your journey or mental health in general?
So for mental health, I have said this before, but I want to say it again. Like, I feel like if anyone is diagnosed with a mental health disorder, illness, whatever it is, they have to really embrace it. And like the quote that I always would use is that if my illness were a person, I would want to hug it, And I think that acceptance of the illness and the disorder, which is actually, if you think of it, a very negative term, maybe come up with a more positive term for it. it's a condition. It's a condition, really. You don't have to, because if you say something like it's a disorder, then you know for sure something is going to go wrong and your brain psychs you into thinking that you're screwed. But if you just turn that whole thinking around and say that, no, this is something positive. And there are many positive things that also come out of being diagnosed with these conditions. I know a lot of people who are artists and who are diagnosed with this condition. For example, I'm a member of Workman Arts, and it's an beautiful organization here in Toronto, which is made up of all artists coping with some mental health condition or the other. And yeah, it's beautiful the work that they do, and it's like it something I feel something good always comes out of anything in life, and even something such as a disorder and illness will can bring you something good. Everything happens for a reason. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if I were to really look at our lives, if I said that 15 years ago, I couldn't imagine that we would be sharing this conversation around my daughter's diagnosis, her mental health journey. It was unheard of, but here we are. We're talking about it, and that's brilliant. Such avenues are so important. These conversations really need to be getting out there in the community. We need to reflect more on these topics. And the one thing that I really stand by is, as a parent, you come with certain expectations for a certain life that you foresee for your child. You start planning for it even before your child is born. You know, you start having this fund for your child to go to university and maybe become a doctor or whatever. And you might have to readjust those plans when something like that happens to you. And that is not a bad thing. It is just making your life and your family's life easy so that they can cope with the vagaries that are thrown at you, whether it's physiological, whether it's genetic or whether it's environmentally caused, whatever the reasons may be, it'll make life easy for you. So take this as a more as a blessing rather than a disaster, because shit happens,
Yep.
and you deal with it. You deal with it.
Yeah, I read, listened to somebody recently, and the suggestion was, as parents, we try to, prepare them, our children, for the world we grew up in, but we really need to prepare them for the world they're growing up in, and they're not necessarily the same, right? What we have our expectations, life has different plans sometimes, right? It's all very true. Isha, I know that, sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I just wanted to say that I wrote something in my book. I just remembered that whether you think of it as a problem or not, like if whether you think of BAPL as a problem or not, either way you're right. So it's the way you want to look at it.
Well, that's a good segue because I was going to ask you about your book and what you're doing now. So can you tell us, I know you're in school, so tell us what you're doing today and
Yeah, sure.
what you have planned for coming up in October.
Yeah, so basically I have been writing a journal, and like it turned into more like a memoir, and it's come to about 180 pages. It's not very long, but it just talks about it again. It's a very honest account of my entire life. I talk about my experience of being a victim of domestic violence in my previous marriage, which was very important for me to share, especially for the women in India who go through that. But I know there are women all over the world who go through that. So it's not just limited to India. And so it talks about the domestic violence. It talks about dealing with basically like I issues in the family, also like dealing with like relationships and dealing with dating, really, when you're diagnosed with something like this, like a guideline basically to follow, like I talked about earlier about having a good sleep cycle and all those things. And yeah, so the title of the book, I should have started with that. It's called Finding Order in Disorder. And yeah, it's just the culmination of like everything put together of my entire experience, including the experience I had of living in CAMH and Sunnybrook while I was sick. And in fact, some of the painting on the cover was done while I was in CAMH in one of the art workshops. And yeah, so I just hope that people enjoy the read. And it's very it's positive and negative, but what I try and do is bring something positive out of the negative, so the whole thing is positive. although there's something like bad or low about it, like I try and turn it around and say that, you know what, no, even this is a good thing because it made me who I am today. And I know it sounds very cliche me saying this, but I truly believe that nothing that kills you, it just makes you stronger, right? Like you just get stronger by the experiences. Your experiences make you. And also it's been a very cathartic experience for me for writing. So I would recommend this to everyone who's going through a mental health issue to take to the pen and write, even if it's not their thing. Because with me, I'm not even a reader. I don't read that many books, but I like to express myself. So if you think that's a thing for you, do it. If you think art is a thing for you, do it. And if you think dancing is a thing for you, do it. Whatever you like to do, just invest your time in that and feel good about yourself. Yeah.
And Shabnan, or what are you up to these days? Are you working on another project, or on the mental health awareness circuit? What are you up to?
Well, I'm doing my PhD and my research is I'm continuing with what I started with my master's. So my master's research was questioning the notion of normality at its very core, and through that the film Unfinished came about because it's also talking about inclusion. It's talking about how we stigmatize people through Isha's beautiful lines in the film, where she talks about how I, sorry, I'm digressing, but I really am very interested in talking about my daughter, where she says that, I pretend I'm happy, just so that nobody knows I'm unwell. So that's sort of a place. And I'm continuing with trying to use theater and performance now. I've left the camera for the time being. So I'm doing a PhD in theater and performance studies, in which I'm investigating how performance can be used to build family connections and bonds. So to better understand the family dynamics and help and create maybe a manual that can be used by any family without the interference of a clinician or a social worker. So we are talking about using Augusta Boal's principles of theater of the oppressed, and adopting it in the medical realm. So a tall order. I don't know whether I'll succeed, but I'm doing this and I'm really, really enjoying my research so far.
Isha mentioned, how she, in her book, it takes what perceived to be a negative experience and trying to turn it into a positive. And hearing what both of you are doing now, it sounds like in what it was obviously a very difficult situation and at times, very stressful and heartbreaking has led you to passions yours in terms of helping people and Isha continuing to write and the work you guys are doing and I just want you to know you're making a difference. Like that documentary will impact people for years to come. And say same with sharing your story like you are today in other places. So thank you both for being so honest. Like that. If anybody asked me what I thought of the documentary, I would just that would probably be the word I would choose to use is it was completely honest. And thank you both very much for sharing that and talking today and the work you're doing for other people. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much
Thank
for
you.
having us.
Make sure to like and subscribe and turn on post notifications. Thank you for watching my Vine podcast.